Welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm your host, John Tanza, coming to you live from Washington. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan this Monday, September 16, 2024. South Sudan's decision to extend the transitional period sparks reactions from across the country.
Maybe in this extension to 2026, there will be another extension again. This extension is too much.
And a South Sudanese analyst says more needs to be done to push the Kiir administration to do the right thing.
This government is not serious about the elections, that there will be no transformation in the system of governance. What are South Sudanese going to do? Nothing.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The signatories of the South Sudan's peace agreement, the 2018 peace agreement, have extended the transitional government of national unity for another 2 years. Martin Alia Lumro, Minister of Cabinet Affairs and the Secretary of the Committee Monitoring the Implementation Matrix of the peace agreement. He announced Friday that the institutions implementing the peace agreement cited security and logistical challenges as obstacles to holding elections. Lomuro says the National Electoral Commission, Joint Security Board, and other institutions suggested that this coming December 22nd is not the best date for elections.
They did not complete all the tasks that are critical for the conduct of elections in December 2024. Two, they needed us to approve extension to first to postpone elections and to extend transition period as a result of postponement.
President Salva Kiir and his five deputies and the signatories of the 2018 peace agreement did not dispute the recommendations of the committee monitoring the peace deal implementation matrix. Lomuro says President Kiir's deputies are in favor of pushing elections to 2026.
And the presidency have endorsed that elections be postponed or delayed according to the recommendations of the security sector institutions and the elections-related institutions.
In March 2022, when the transitional period was extended until the end of this year, First Vice President Riek Machar had this to say.
Our concern was, if we extend, how do we sell it to South Sudanese? Because some people think extension is just for sake of being in power. But what choice do you have if you don't extend? If you don't extend, you go to square one. And we all know what the square one is.
Lomuro says the Transitional Government of National Unity will work hard during the coming years to prepare the country for elections.
Two, as a result of this endorsement of postponement, we have agreed to reset the transitional period to begin from February 2025 to 2026, with the elections being conducted in 22nd of December 2026.
The news of the extension was met with mixed reactions from South Sudanese. Some government critics have called it a plan by the Kiir administration to stay in power. Holdout rebel groups and civil society members negotiating with the South Sudan government in Nairobi have not issued a statement about the decision. South Sudanese in Juba are expressing mixed reaction to the decision to extend the government's transitional period for 2 more years. Some residents of Juba say their hopes for elections have been crushed and they are frustrated by politicians who do not care about the aspirations of the people. Dennis Logonyi has more for VOA from Juba.
In Juba, some South Sudanese say they are dismayed by the decision to extend the transitional government of national unity for 2 years and push elections back to December 2026 instead of holding them as expected late this year. In March 2022, the transitional government extended its life until December 2024 in what was called a roadmap for implementing the 2018 peace agreement. Min Gabriel, a resident of Nimra Talata residential area in Juba, says his hopes for electing the country's leaders are disrupted.
We need the elected government. The current government is a government of the parties to the agreement. And these parties to the agreement, what they prioritize is their interests, not the interests of the people of South Sudanese. If it is the interest of the people of South Sudanese, why they always extend after 2 years, they extend another extension. Even this extension to 2026, there will be another extension again. This extension is too much.
According to the presidency, the remaining month of the current transitional period will be used to mobilize funds to effectively implement the peace agreement. Zahara Said, a resident of the Gurey area, asks how the government will be able to complete the pending tasks after failing so many times.
The citizens who took it negatively had high hope in the elections in December. Even though no much preparations were done, they said the elections were the only hope for South Sudan. It will bring unity among the citizens. Now all our eyes, the whole world is looking at the president. Is he willing? We have been in transition after transition. Since South Sudan was born, we have been in transition. From 2005 to 2010, transition. From 2010, agreement after agreement after agreement. Now another one.
Folul Hawk, who lives in the Mangaten suburb, says his hopes for elections were shattered and he wants the government to focus on improving the welfare of its citizens.
The transition is not moving the way South Sudanese expected it, because South Sudanese want to live in a country where their life improves daily, not shrinking every time and every day. And please work on improving the security and the economic of our country. The rest of the things are secondary. We know how difficult it is implementing a fees that is not being funded by anyone, but it is our country. We have to take the responsibility. You must pay the civil servant so that they serve the people of South Sudan.
Sebi Daniel, a resident of Lologo, says he was not surprised by the extension. He says President Salva Kiir and his five deputies should listen to their views.
I knew that there would never be election. With all this fracas, with all this noise and shuffling around, it is obvious that these leaders, the principals, they will devise other means of extending their rule. If they continue in this way, I think time and history will judge them. They should know that people know a lot about them and they can't deceive.
Martin Elia Lomoro, the Minister for Cabinet Affairs, said the election delay came after recommendations from electoral institutions and the security force. In addition, key tasks from the 2018 agreement have not been completed, including drafting a national constitution. For VOA News, I'm Dennis Logonyi reporting from Juba.
From Juba, we move to Malakal, where some residents of the Upper Nile State capital say President Salva Kiir and his five deputies have made the right decision to postpone election scheduled for December 2024. However, they are concerned the 2 years could end without progress. For VOA News, Mamer Abraham Kwart reports from Malakal.
James Dan, who lives in Ren County, says the South Sudan government made the right decision.
We need a stability first also in South Sudan, because whenever there is a stability, the country also will be stable. At this moment, the people will suffer, but suffering is better than whenever there is no stability.
Michael Lem, a resident of Malakal, says security is paramount during elections. He says the extension could give time to prepare for free and fair elections.
Their worry is that there will be no improvement after these 2 years. If there is mess up in every part like this, then what is the goodness of this thing? So if we spend these 2 years and there will be free and fair election where there will be no other sections or other parties which will be warring party again, then it's good also. But what we are seeing, it seems as if we are still will be continuing like this in the same way.
Malek Ball, another Malakal resident, says the government should prioritize road connections during the extension period.
There is no road connection so that you can be able to go to any county or any payam in South Sudan here now. So we suppose to connect South Sudan first with the road. Then census will come, unification of forces will come.
I'm afraid our leaders don't evaluate the situation, and that's why they don't respect the agreement. They don't care about the suffering of the people of South Sudan.
Gabriel Oluoch lives in the United Nations Protection of Civilians site in Malakal. He says some South Sudanese hope the Kenya-led peace process known as the Tumaini Initiative could bring change.
People, they have no choice because we cannot have choice as we don't have any change. This situation now is just normal to the people. Different agreement made, there's no change. So people lose hope on that because people think that even this thing will be the same.
Officials in the transitional government of national unity say they extended the transitional period because of security and logistical challenges. In 2022, the transitional period was extended and elections scheduled for this December in what was dubbed a roadmap for the implementation of the 2018 peace agreement. For VOA News, I am Amera Bramquart, reporting from Upper Nile State's capital, Malakal.
Still on the extension, a South Sudanese analyst says most people in the country are disappointed by the decision to postpone elections for 2 years. Jogmadu Jog, co-founder of the Juba-based SAD Institute and a professor of anthropology, says South Sudanese have little confidence in the government. Jog tells VOA's Peter Clotty that South Sudanese must pressure the administration to do the right thing.
This announcement was not surprising at all for those of us who have spent the last year and a half saying that the government is certainly not in a position to hold elections. And they insisted, we are going for elections. You've had Minister Michael Makuei blasting at crowds saying, we must go for elections. We are going for elections. SPLM will win this election. And we are saying, how are you going to hold elections? But what does it mean for people of South Sudan who may have been disillusioned to think that there is going to be an election? What do they say now that the government itself has now announced it, as opposed to when we were always predicting that the election will not happen? This government is not serious about the elections. That there will be no transformation in the system of governance. What are South Sudanese going to do? Nothing.
The key reasons behind the decision to postpone the elections for 2 years, according to the government, is that certain processes would have to be established or completed first, including census, the drafting of a permanent constitution, and the registration of political parties. What do you make of the reasons behind the decision?
Well, that is why we were saying all along, how are you going to hold elections if you have not accomplished some of the basic requirements that were expected of the government of national unity to implement on the agreement? Security forces being one, in constitution another, political parties, freedom of speech, cancellation of some of the laws that have been draconian, but instead now the government has pushed through the national security law. So all these circumstances do not bode well for an election. In a country that has never had elections as an independent country, for a country that is broke, for a country that has close to 4 million of its people are living in IDP camps or in refugee camps, how are you going to hold elections?
Do you think these ingredients, the census, the drafting of a permanent constitution and the registration of political parties, can happen within these 2 years for elections to be organized?
Well, it's even more than that. It's been 6 years since the RRCs was signed in 2018. So you couldn't do all these things that you have agreed to do in 6 years. You're going to be able to do them in the next year or two of extension. Obviously, it's not logical, and nobody should believe of these things. And now, what are the South Sudanese going to do? Now it is, as we say in Arabic, we are going to extend this government, and we are going to now try to work on the constitution, work on registration, work on census, work on this in 2 years or 1 year, 2 years. How is that going to be easier to do when you have failed to do it in 6 years?
This is the second time the country has postponed elections since gaining independence in 2011. Where does this leave the people of South Sudan in the ability to practice democracy, have the ability to choose their own leaders?
Well, what this situation should tell us, South Sudanese, is that governments, not just the South Sudan government alone, all governments always have to be made to provide services and goods to its peoples, to serve its people. So how much have South Sudanese themselves compelled the government that is running their country? Because if they cannot pressure, they cannot push, whether through protest or through legislative procedures, if they don't protest, government is not just going to come up and say, oh, I love my people and I'm going to serve them. No, it will not happen. So I think with this declaration that elections will not happen, just as it happened in 2013 when the 2015 election was now going to be a gone case, just as it has happened and disappointment after disappointment throughout South Sudan for the last 20 years, what are South Sudanese going to say about this announcement? Because obviously they might say 2 years more and then 2 years run out and then it is 2 years again. How do you know it will not be a perpetual extension after extension for the rest of our lives?
That's Jock Madudjo, co-founder of the Juba-based SAD Institute and a professor of anthropology at Syracuse University in New York. He spoke with VOA's Peter Clody from New York. Sudanese military leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan visited South Sudan Monday for what the South Sudanese authorities called bilateral talks. President Kiir met with the Sudanese leader, and details of their meetings were not made public until the time for this broadcast. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, Zambia deals with climate change. Find out why after the break. You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. As Zambia deals with its worst drought in 20 years, businesses and households are going for days without electricity. Experts say the severe energy crisis could worsen Zambia's already fragile economy and lead to massive job losses. Cut it short, reports from the country's capital, Lusaka.
Millions of people across Zambia are enduring up to 21 hours of power cuts daily, locally known as load shedding. Taonga Zulu, a Lusaka resident who runs a family farm business, told VOA that her livelihood has been hurt by the power cuts.
It has become nearly impossible to manage the chicken run properly as we rely on electricity for various aspects of their care. The lack of power has also prevented us from pumping water, which means our farm is slowly turning into a desert.
The Zambia Association of Manufacturers is a business association representing the interests of the country's factories. Association President Ashu Sagar said his members have not been spared by the energy crisis. He says big companies are struggling with the cost of running alternative diesel-powered generators, while smaller companies have no energy source at all. Sagar adds that some of the association's members have failed to meet contractual obligations with buyers due to the drought-induced energy crisis.
So the impact on the manufacturing sector is quite big in that small companies that probably could have no capacity to invest in alternative energy solutions like diesel generators have had to curtail their manufacturing operations.
Zambia's only public power utility company, the Zambia Electricity Supply Corporation, or ZESCO, said Monday that it does not have power to supply all hospitals. Media reports say some hospitals are turning patients away due to lack of electricity and water. ZESCO spokesperson Matongo Maumbi said the country's heavy reliance on hydropower generation has led to a national shortfall of almost 1,300 megawatts as the various water sources are drying up. Economist Emmanuel Zulu says the energy crisis is dragging down the economy and pushing up unemployment.
There is a slump in output and productivity in the economy, and this is going to affect GDP as well as employment, because most people will be left with nothing to do.
Worsened by climate change and the El Nino weather pattern, the energy crisis threatens national food security, water and energy supply, Zambia's President Hakainde Hichilema said earlier this year. In his State of the Nation address to Parliament Friday, Hichilema said his government is working around the clock to address the energy crisis.
Government is implementing a number of interventions in a bid to enhance resilience and reduce our dependence on hydroelectric power. We are promoting alternative energy sources.
Energy expert Johnston Chikwanda is optimistic that new measures like the removal of the bureaucratic hurdles that discouraged private companies from investing in energy production will yield results in the near future.
Looking at the extent of the measures which are currently being implemented and the strong praxis of leadership driving the energy sector reforms, I am convinced that this crisis is being invested better than how we previously handled the previous crisis.
According to the United Nations, Zambia, Zimbabwe and Malawi are among the countries in Southern Africa most affected by the regional drought that began early this year. Kathy Short for VOA News, Lusaka, Zambia.
From Lusaka, Zambia, we come back to the United States, where President Donald Trump is safe after officials say it was the second unsuccessful assassination attempt in 2 months. The FBI took the lead after Sunday's shooting with the suspect in custody. VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell reports from Washington.
For the second time in 9 weeks, former President Donald Trump walked away from a would-be assassination. The latest on Sunday afternoon at his golf club in West Palm Beach, Florida, the FBI said. Unlike the previous attempt, this one did not happen on live television, like the dramatic shooting Trump survived on July 13th. That attempt wounded Trump in the ear and killed a rally attendee behind him. Days later, Trump accepted the Republican Party's presidential nomination. Officials on Sunday said Trump was not hurt.
Former President Donald Trump is safe and unharmed.
The Federal Bureau of Investigation, which is leading the investigation, says it appears to be an attempted assassination. The local sheriff said the suspect fled, leaving behind an AK-47-style rifle with a scope, a GoPro camera, and 2 backpacks. Police later caught him as he sped along the main highway into a neighboring county. Sheriff Rick Bradshaw leads the Palm Beach County Sheriff's Office.
The Secret Service agent that was on the course did a fantastic job. What they do is they have an agent that jumps one hole ahead of time to where the president was at. And he was able to spot this rifle barrel sticking out of the fence and immediately engage that individual, at which time the individual took off.
In a joint statement less than an hour after the Trump campaign announced this second attempt on Trump's life, President Joe Biden and Vice President Kamala Harris said they were being regularly briefed and said they are relieved that Trump is safe. The sheriff said that the suspect was between 300 and 500 yards, about 275 to 460 meters from Trump, hiding in shrubbery. And as Monday dawns and questions swirl in America about how this will add further uncertainty in an already tumultuous election, those simple numbers underscore a terrifying fact. That a shooter managed to get so close to Trump, comfortably within the range of an AK-47-style rifle, about 275 meters. Anita Powell, VOA News, Washington.
From Washington, we move to Tel Aviv, where Israel's Prime Minister vows his country will exact a heavy price following a missile strike in central Israel. Yemeni's Iran-backed Houthis took credit for the non-lethal attack as the Israeli-Hamas conflict continues to spread. VOA's Arish Arabasadi has more on the rising tension in the region.
A small fire burns brush near Modi'in in central Israel. This is the aftermath of a hypersonic ballistic missile launched by the Iran-aligned Houthi rebels in Yemen, more than 2,000 kilometers away. Houthi military spokesperson Brigadier General Yahya Sari on an Ansar Allah media office feed as provided by the Associated Press.
The Israeli enemy should expect more strikes as we approach the first anniversary of the blessed October 7th operation. These include continued support operations for the oppressed Palestinian people.
Sari referencing the October 7th terror attacks carried out by Hamas, in which the group killed 1,200 people in Israel and kidnapped more than 250 others. Tens of thousands of Palestinians have been killed in Israel's counteroffensive in Gaza. Israel reported no fatalities or injuries in this weekend's missile strike, but Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu vowed vengeance while addressing his cabinet. Netanyahu speaking on a government press office feed as provided by Reuters.
We are in a multi-front campaign against Iran's axis of evil. They should have known by now that we exact a heavy price for every attempt to harm us. Hamas is already learning this through our determined action, which will bring about its destruction and the release of all of our hostages.
Despite his pledge to bring hostages home, many Israelis say Netanyahu is simply not doing enough. Protester Israel Harag speaking with Reuters in Tel Aviv.
He doesn't care that they'll die. He doesn't care about nothing. He cares only about continuing ruling. And he's not even ruling. He's not managing anything in Israel. Israel is in complete anarchy.
Demonstrations against Netanyahu's government aren't new in Israel. But these mass protests renewed in recent weeks after the military recovered the bodies of six hostages from Gaza. Israel and U.S.-designated terror group Hamas continue blaming each other for a lack of a ceasefire deal that would include freeing remaining hostages. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
That's all we prepared for you this Monday, September 16, 2024. We now leave you with the song Chen Chen by Dis Majos. For more on our programs, visit www.voaafrica.com. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and engineer, Killer William, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
On a recent visit to London, Secretary of State Antony Blinken met with United Kingdom Foreign Secretary David Lammy to discuss foreign policy priorities shared by both nations. Chief among them is continued support for Ukraine, said Secretary Blinken.
Together, we're working to make sure that Ukraine can defend its territory against the ongoing aggression, that it will be able to stand strongly on its own two feet, militarily, economically, democratically, and that it will remain on the path that the Ukrainian people so desire it to be on, of closer integration with Europe, with transatlantic institutions.
Secretary Blinken and Foreign Secretary Lammy also discussed joint efforts to ensure peace and stability across the Taiwan Strait and freedom of navigation and overflight in the South China Sea.
For both of us, maintaining peace and stability, preserving the status quo, is essential, and it's essential not just to us. It's, again, essential to countries all around the world.
In order to wage war on Ukraine, Russian President Vladimir Putin is acquiring weapons from Iran and the DPRK in clear violation of multiple UN Security Council resolutions, said Secretary Blinken.
Tehran has long supplied deadly drones. It's built a drone factory in Russia. It's trained Russian personnel on how to operate them. For some time, the United States has warned of an additional threat, the provision by Iran of ballistic missiles to Russia for use in Ukraine. Russia has now received shipments of these ballistic missiles and will likely use them within weeks in Ukraine against Ukrainians.
Russia is sharing technology that Iran seeks, including on nuclear issues as well as some space information. Secretary Blinken warned that this could lead to significant economic consequences for Tehran's actions. On Israel and Gaza, both leaders discussed efforts to prevent the crisis in the Middle East from escalating. Our nations helped Israel defend itself against an unprecedented attack from Iran a few months ago. We're prepared to act together to help Israel defend itself in the future, said Secretary Blinken. We're equally determined to end the conflict in Gaza as soon as possible. The United States is grateful to have a strong partner in the United Kingdom to take on the urgent challenges facing the transatlantic community.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.